Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the one and only Brunch Network, where thousands tune in weekly to listen to our hosts roll out of bed and talk all things sports and gambling. Now for the guys that help cure all your hangovers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Brunch. It is Thursday night, 8 p.m. on April 12th. The weather is getting warmer, and I'm your host, Chris Malicki. Joe Caputo is out of town this week. Joe is out in Chicago on business. He's checking out the Cubs. He's checking out the White Sox. So when Joe is away, Chris can play, and that's what I plan to do today because we are having our first NBA playoff show in years, NBA show in general. I mean, it's been a very long time back since we were in college, and all you OG Brunch listeners, you might remember. You might remember another man being on the show with us. We'll get to him soon. He will be my special guest today. But I just wanted to do a quick little bit of housekeeping before we get into the NBA playoffs. And don't worry, you're not going to have to listen to me talk for 90 minutes by myself. If you want to call in, we got 818-688-6658 is the number. And we will be going through each team. We'll be going through storylines for each team. We'll pick all the matchups. We're going to do the whole shebang. But you're going to have to wait a little bit to call in, and then we will get to you as we get on with the show. So before we get started, I just wanted to say quickly that I'm not sure if we've mentioned it on the show last week or not, but we have begun the next Brunch Madness bracket. Brunch Madness does not sleep, and even though March Madness ends, Brunch Madness lives on. So we have the sequel to the candy bracket, and that is the TV show bracket, where we are going to crown the best TV show of all time, and this one's going to get heated. Joe and I have had quite a bit of some pullback from many people, a little upset about the bracket, a lot of shows that are quote-unquote underrated. The committee has done what they have to do. People are upset all the time, but you know, this is a show that this is a bracket that people are going to get really upset about because of the fact that, you know, they are very passionate about their shows, and that's understandable. So with that being said, we will. I would encourage everybody, if you haven't done so already, we're actually going to do a special thing for this bracket. We are going to allow you to pick it yourself, enter it online, and then the winner will be the champion of the free brunch T-shirt. So all you have to do is go to our Facebook, our Twitter, our Instagram bio. The links are there. All you have to do is click on it. It'll give you the option to sign in and fill out a bracket, put your name on. One entry per person, and we are probably going to start this bracket next week, end of next week. I'm thinking either Thursday or Friday. So be ready. Get it done in the next week. You got a week. No excuse not to do it. And, you know, we'll see if your show can make it. So without further ado, I would like to bring in a man who is a very, very savant NBA fan, and that's why he's my guest on the show today. Of all the people I could have chosen, he's also a big process truster. And no, don't worry, folks. It's not Bern and Ernie. We have the return of Eli Silverman on the Sports Brunch. Eli, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. How are you doing, Chris? Thanks for having me.
I am great. Yeah, I think it's been about 4 years. I remember we did an NBA playoff show, me, you, and Joe, back at your house at TCNJ, and that was back when Joe was still an NBA fan. I know people may not believe that existed at one point. But the playoffs are here, and I think the most exciting part about it, not to harp on an injury storyline, but I think it's interesting because this is the first time in a while where both conferences are somewhat up in the air. You have the Eastern Conference, which is very wide open. The Western Conference, obviously the injury to Steph Curry, a down year for Draymond Green, and just a lot of weird stuff going on overall with Golden State, maybe makes the Rockets, you know, a bit of a contender here. So with that being said, why don't we get started right off the bat with the Warriors, who, you know, are kind of the biggest part of the NBA. Everything revolves around them. And we saw 2 years ago, Steph Curry came back to the playoffs, and he wasn't himself. After an injury, he's got, I think it's the sprained, is it his MCL or is his ankle again?
I can't remember. His MCL.
Yeah.
I think it's his MCL this time, and he just didn't have the same burst when he came back last time.
Exactly. And that's, you know, the biggest thing, obviously, outside of the fact that we still don't know when he's coming back. We know he won't be around for the series against the Spurs. But it's been a bit of a muffled, you know, kind of injury report. And I know that Steve Kerr, I'm sure, wants to keep things close to the vest. But we don't really know when Steph Curry is going to come back. So that being said, and when he does come back, like you said, they're going to be, you know, there's going to be an adjustment. He's going to need to, you know, take some time to get his legs back. And I don't know if he's going to have that time because there just won't be enough games left. So with that being said, you know, do you think there is a shot that we can maybe get an 100% Steph Curry, or is this going to be a different kind of Warriors team where I know maybe you can argue he's not the best player on the team, but he is the most important. And if Curry is not what he usually is, this could cause Durant to, you know, have to really take control of this team. So what do you think? What do you think is going to happen with Curry?
I mean, honestly, impossible to say, but this team is a little bit better off than they were 2 years ago when Curry went out and he wasn't himself. He still did have to carry his team. At least they have Durant now, even though they do have a weaker bench at this point.
The bench is a little down.
It is. It scares me a little bit, but like if Durant plays like a top three player in the league, like I believe he is, I honestly think they can beat anyone, and I still think they're the favorite without Curry.
I agree with you, and I think, you know, it's interesting you say that because a lot of stuff, especially in the NBA where there's just so much, you know, drama and storyline surrounding it, a lot is based on perception. And I think it's very easy to, you know, forget that just 2 years ago when this Warriors team had won a record 73 games, Kevin Durant was eviscerating them in the Western Conference Finals. And, you know, I do wonder what exactly, you know, can he get into that gear? What will it take for him to get into that gear based on the fact that, not that he has a secondary role on the Warriors, but he's definitely, you know, been able to take up less than, you know, his normal load would be. So I think it'll be interesting to see what Durant does, obviously.
You're talking about Durant picking up? Yeah, he did do it in the finals, though. Like, I mean, you saw him take over games in the finals against LeBron, too. He did have Curry.
Yeah, it's just and I do wonder, too, with Kevin Durant, what his mental psyche would be. You know, like, I think, yeah, maybe he did take over in the finals last year, and Curry maybe didn't have a ton to do with it, but Kevin Durant has shown he's kind of a fragile player, and he gets rattled very easily.
Yeah.
You know, he had the whole burner Twitter account thing, and he just gets, you know, I think he just gets really in his head a lot. So I do wonder, you know, because if this happens where Curry is not back or is not 100%, you can't tell me that the thought will not cross Durant's mind that, okay, if I lose this year and I don't win the finals, then my legacy is again going to be questioned because all I could do was do it I couldn't do it without Curry. So,
yeah,
you know, do you think they're actually vulnerable, though?
Yeah, but it's not even only because of Curry. Like, Draymond, he hasn't looked like the same player where he was able to be a playmaker everywhere on defense. 2 years ago, last year even, he did that. This year, he just didn't have the same spark. So it's a few combination of factors where, like, yeah, they look a little bit vulnerable, but some team like the Rockets, they're just incredible. So that's kind of forcing our perception of that. I still think they're going to win. It's the Warriors. Like, I can't choose against them at this point.
I do wonder what would happen. I really hope we get a Rockets-Warriors series. And I do hope Curry's healthy. But I do wonder what would happen because, you know, they are really the toughest test that the Warriors are probably going to get in quite some time, you know, at least with Durant. But, you know, you said it best. Draymond has been off this year. His defense has plummeted. He hasn't been shooting the ball great. You know, Klay Thompson's been in and out of the lineup, but, you know, he's been fine. And I think, too, you know, the supporting cast is not great. And a lot of, you know, people that the Warriors were kind of banking on have not really panned out. I mean, Nick Young has been fine. Sean Livingston is still there. And so is David
West.
He's the same
player.
But, I mean, Patrick McCaw has, you know, I feel like he's stunted a bit. Omri Caspi, that's not
nothing. He broke his back. Yeah.
Okay, well, I meant before that. You didn't have to bring that up, Eli.
I'm sorry. Caspi's cut at this point, too.
Yeah, Caspi's
gone. I feel bad about that.
A lot of people thought he would be a great addition. Jordan Bell, I don't really know if I'm expecting anything from him at this point. Quinn Cook, you know, is as good as he's been and as valuable as he probably is and good of a basketball player he is. The signing seemed a little bit of a desperation signing. You know, they had to get this guy in here because, and I get that, you know, you need it for depth, you need it for the injury. But the biggest concern to me, and we can kind of move into the Rockets too while we're talking, is Andre Iguodala, who, you know, has been on kind of a steady decline, and he is now really starting to crater a bit. And, you know, you don't really think of him as being the crux of those small ball death lineups, but you can't really function without him like that. I mean, unless you want to try to put Nick Young in there, but I don't know if that's going to work. And, you know, if Iguodala is not making the death lineup what it is, and you're forced to go with Iguodala, Curry, Green, Durant, and Thompson, or you sub Iguodala as a quote-unquote non-shooter with like a Zaza, the Rockets are really equipped
or even
to
Livingston.
Run.
Yeah,
even Livingston, who can't. The Rockets are equipped to run that guy off the floor, to target him constantly, because they have guys who can shoot and who can defend across so many positions. And I really hope that this Bob Moute injury is not serious, because he's big to their success. So, you know, that's kind of what this Rockets team has been all about. It's been the same but different. And, you know, why would you say that this Rockets team, despite, and, you know, we'll get into Chris Paul in a minute, but outside of Chris Paul, what makes you feel like they're better, so much better than they were last year, despite the fact that they have a similar cast of players and they're running the same system that got exposed in the second round last year?
It's the defensive versatility. Honestly, I mean, yeah, they're one of the best offensive teams ever still. And by Moute signing and the Tucker signing, they've been playing a little bit more small ball this year. And they just spread everyone out. It's fun because they just play isolation ball after isolation ball, and it shouldn't work, but it just keeps working.
It is kind of crazy, you know, that the league's going away from this, and yet James Harden is about to win MVP as, you know, a heavy isolation player, which is cool to see it, because the Rockets are, it's almost like they are adapting certain principles of the modern game with, like you said, the 3-and-D, spreading everybody out, but they're also staying true to, you know, some other roots like the isolation. I think the pick and roll is very prevalent for everyone, but isolation ball is starting to become a thing of the past. It just works for them though, because there's so much space and you have an elite shot creator in James Harden surrounded by all these shooters and giving them all that space. It's not your typical isolation. So I think the roster construction, you know, even if it has been slight, although Chris Paul has been a huge addition, and he it is kind of funny, a lot of the people who said they didn't really think they could split their time well, and Paul and Harden. And as soon as the trade was made, I was kind of like, I mean, there's so much talent there; they're gonna figure it out. Like, and it happened very quickly.
I trust D'Antoni. Like he invented the modern offense. He'll find a way to get both of them the ball.
Absolutely, and especially when you do give D'Antoni that talent, you know, it's a whole different ball game for him. He struggled when he was coaching the Knicks at times, but that's because he was coaching the Knicks. D'Antoni is still a very good coach. He won Coach of the Year last year. The Rockets have four guys who are in the top six of the league in offensive rating. They have Chris Paul at 2, Eric Gordon at 3, James Harden at 5, and P.J. Tucker at 6. And that just kind of shows you how everything has kind of come together, and with the players they've plugged in, their styles of play, it's just meshed together so well. It's really cool to see, especially in an era where the Warriors have kind of dominated in a similar way. I mean, they built a team relatively from scratch, and it's become this juggernaut, and they've kind of followed a similar pattern, but it's cool to finally see a real, real contender for the Warriors, and the injury, of course, throws a wrench in it. But I think that this Rockets team, I think they have a shot, and they're going to have home court if they play Golden State in a Western Conference Finals matchup, which can't be understated. So, you know, I really think that there's a chance that maybe the Rockets do pull off the upset here. I think I checked today, and the Rockets and Warriors are co-favorites to win the NBA Finals. The Rockets may be slightly above them in other books, but I think the Rockets have a real shot here, and I think that above all else, you and I mean, I always tell people why I love the NBA playoffs so much is because I find so much intrigue in all the storylines and all the matchups. Like, I'm excited for Blazers-Pelicans, even though neither team will probably win more than that series. But it's just really cool to see. There's just so much talent in the NBA, and it's so cool to see them all, you know, how everybody matches up and how everything plays itself out, even if you know the result is a bit, you know, assumed. But I think the Rockets at least leave some things up to debate. So Chris Paul has been phenomenal. I mean, is there anything else you want to say about the Rockets and what?
Honestly, no. I mean, I want to piggyback off the Luke Richard. Like, I don't think they can win without him. And
yeah, I don't think they can beat him.
It's a similar thing with Iguodala, where like you don't think he's that important to the team, but just being able to switch everything on defense, facing the floor the little bit that he does, and just doing everything right. I think he's a pretty similar player in that regard. He was just like, kind of makes things click. It's pretty stupid to say when you have two Hall of Famers running pick and rolls over and over that Luke Richard and PJ Tucker might be the keys.
No, but you're right, because we've seen it in the past. So many playoff series are decided by what happens when somebody gets to pick on the opposing player. We've seen the Thunder struggle because Andre Roberson can't shoot. And when you have that one weak link in the playoffs, teams know exactly what they have to do. So I agree. I don't think the Rockets can win without a healthy Mbah Mute, just because the domino effect of, okay, who do you replace Mbah Mute with? I mean, then you put in Ryan Anderson, then all of a sudden he gets run off the court by the Warriors. And then it's, you know, the Rockets don't have a super deep team. They don't need to. I mean, they've got, they do have Nene and Gerald Green and Joe Johnson coming off the bench, but at this point, this playoffs for the Rockets will be decided by the starting lineup. And you know, you can only hope that I don't think they'll need him for the Timberwolves series. So I think they'll be okay. So well, why don't we get into the two opponents of the Rockets and the Warriors, and that's the Timberwolves and the Spurs. Do you have any interesting thoughts about either of these teams, or any inklings of them possibly testing the top two seeds in the West?
Yeah, so the Timberwolves, I really like them. I don't think they're going to win, but I really like them. Before the Jimmy Butler injury, they were, number three seed at that point when Jimmy Butler went down and
they
dropped down to eight and just missed the playoffs. Like, they've been playing, they played great, not great defense, but they played good offense. They're good team players, even though they all play 40 minutes a game. that happens. But, like, they were good. Like, they were one of the best teams in the West. And then Jimmy Butler went down, and I just want to give them a fair shot.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think they have, like, the toughest matchup just because, I mean, you could argue that the Warriors without Curry may be a little blood in the water, but it's not looking good for the Timber Pups. I think that, like you said, they looked really good. And the fact that Jimmy Butler could come into this team and make such an impact right off the bat has been really impressive, especially on the defensive end. And not that they're not a great defensive team. A lot of it has been their offense, but he has kind of pulled them from being an awful defensive team to like at least a somewhat competent defensive team.
Yeah. They were bottom five in the league last year. And that's it.
And they had so much talent, and Karl Towns and Wiggins, and you need a guy like Butler, not just to, you know, be that leader, but bring everything together. And I think Towns showed a lot of growth when Butler was out. He played very well. Wiggins, not so much. There is some concerns about Andrew Wiggins, but I would say, you know, this team of Karl Towns, Wiggins, and a lot of former Bulls – and Tyus Jones, who's had a really nice year quietly. Not so quietly, but he's been really, really good when he's on the court for them. And they've succeeded a lot while he's been on the court. But it is a tough matchup here, and I just think that it's probably unlikely that I don't know if they're going to win more than a game. You know, I think that this is a team that they broke their playoff drought. They're happy to be there. But, you know, the tough matchup combined with the fact that Butler is still working his way back from a knee injury, I think they're better served for next year. And then I think next year is the year where, you know, you can really expect a lot out of this team.
Yeah, I mean, assuming you keep growth with Karl-Anthony Towns, he's getting better. Maybe Wiggins is getting better. Who knows? They honestly could be a contender next year. And if they add some pieces in free agency, because they need a little bit more depth right now. But, yeah, I feel bad, honestly. I was rooting for them the whole season, and then Jimmy Butler went down, and shame that, like, you just know they have no shot right now.
Yeah, I know. But, well, I'm glad they got in, though, then broke that playoff drought.
Yeah. And the Spurs, as well as Popovich coaches and has gotten this team to be a top five defensive team in the league, even with the personnel that they had without the defensive player of the year. I don't know if they have enough offense.
That's the big issue.
A double team of LaMarcus Aldridge every time, or a hard double, and no one else is able to really, really cover for that.
And even if you weren't double teaming LaMarcus the whole time, I don't know if you want to run your playoff offense through LaMarcus Aldridge on the block in 2018. It's just not really the way it works now. Aldridge, to his credit, has had an amazing year, but you know, you look at the guys who are on this roster. I mean, Patty Mills, Kyle Anderson, Pau Gasol, Danny Green, DeJounte Murray, Bryn Forbes, Ginobili, Rudy Gay, Davis Bertans, Tony Parker. I mean, this is just – it's a cast of guys who are, you know, a little past their prime and guys who are just kind of no name, not that good. I will say that a lot of the defense, aside from Pop being Pop, it's been really impressive to see the backcourt tandem of DeJounte Murray and Danny Green. When they're on the floor, it's hell, you know. And I just, like, mm-hmm. I'm picturing – I know Danny Green's a free agent, but I'm picturing at least Murray, if Kawhi – everything goes well with Kawhi and he combines Murray and defense next year, it's going to be a real nightmare for teams. But I don't know. I don't know if there's enough offense here. I mean, I think, you know, it seems so obvious that the Spurs just don't have the offense or athleticism to compete with the Warriors, and that this was the matchup they did not want. You know, they could handle maybe Utah. They could handle maybe Oklahoma City. They did not want the Warriors. But with Curry being out,
them winning.
Yeah, no, exactly. You just want to stay out of that one or two seed. And if you were if you're the Warriors, you can almost argue that you'd rather play the Spurs over some of these teams because you don't have to face Anthony Davis or Damian Lillard or even Jimmy Butler and Karl Towns. You know, you don't have to worry about these kind of, you know, matchup wrenches that the Spurs don't quite have. I think they might surprise a little bit. I think they might win a game or two here and make people think a little bit just because Pop is Pop. It just seems like such a foregone conclusion that the Spurs are going to roll over and they just don't do that. So I could see it being a bit of a series, but at the end of the day, I agree. The Rockets and the Warriors are probably going to win their first-round series without too much of a question. All right, Eli, are you ready?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I know exactly
what
to talk about now.
Yeah, well, so what? we're going to talk about a team in the Eastern Conference that looks like they just might be on their way to the finals, and it's your Philadelphia 76ers. All of a sudden, you've gone from the lovable underdog to the popular, trendy finals pick with a decent road to the Eastern Conference Finals. You're the hottest team in the NBA right now. You don't even have your best player. I mean, mm-hmm. The Eagles won the Super Bowl. Villanova won the national championship. If the Sixers can somehow, some way, win the NBA Finals this year, the chances of Philly burning to the ground over or under 95%?
Over, 100% over. And okay. I apologize in advance to all the listeners. but I'm not going to be able to stay biased or stay unbiased during this section.
No, I want to hear it because you're one of the more you're one of the more dedicated and knowledgeable Sixers fans I know. I've seen you watch a Sixers practice before when they were in the process and when they were, you know, just a 17 win team or whatever. So, well, I'm glad you pulled out of that, and I'm glad you're here now, and you deserve it. All the Sixers fans do for trusting the process. But I want to hear, mm-hmm. you know, don't hold back. I want to hear everything you have to say about the Sixers and what this playoff run is for them.
So, honestly, it's been hard for me because, I've been so used to being negative about the Sixers and knowing that, like, even if they're playing well for two games, they're going to lose to the Hawks the next game or something like that, and it just hasn't happened. And when Embiid went out, I honestly thought we were going to move down to the 5 seed. I still didn't have hope. And then they just keep winning, and every game in the 16-game win streak that we have against a good team, like the Timberwolves, I was at that game. The Nuggets, I was at that game. Last night against the Bucks, I was at that game. And we just, like, those are the playoff teams, and we just blew them out. We blew them out. Plus the Cavs game. I'm not sure if you watched that the other day.
I didn't get to watch. I watched the ending, but that I did not see the first half. But I know that they were really taking it to Cleveland.
Every chance we've had in the last 2 months, really honestly since 2018 began to play against a good team and go against them, we've come up to the challenge. And I'm finally starting to get my confidence. Like, I'm not scared of any other team in the Eastern Conference with the exception of LeBron James. And LeBron James only, not even the Cavs.
He's a player, Eli. He's not a team.
Yeah, but, you know, it's LeBron. But this team defensively, one of the best defensive teams in the league recently. Covington.
They're third in the league in defense.
Simmons, third in the league in defense. I know, but, like, even without Embiid, like, I was a big proponent of Embiid for Defensive Player of the Year, and Gobert will probably win, and that's fine. He's an incredible defensive player. But, like, even so, when Embiid went out, like, we just couldn't chugging along completely, and it makes me – they can do it without him.
So you're not concerned about the fact that his availability is still somewhat in question. It seems optimistic that he'll be back at some point in the first round, but that doesn't bother you too much.
Yeah. If we're not going anywhere far. I think we can win the first series against the Heat without him. Or even a game or two. Maybe not the whole series, but he seems to be. He thinks he'll be back in the second game. But yeah, he raises our ceiling to another level. And
yeah, he.
I don't know. Like I don't know. I'm honestly lost for words talking about them because
you sound like you're like they're like your children. And you're crying because, Eli, I can't have you break down on air. I can't. There are people listening. There may be people who want to call in at a certain point. So I need you to at least stick with me here.
I'll try.
So I'll take it from here for a little bit. Everything you said is absolutely true. They've been on fire, and I don't think it's a fluke. I mean, the defense has been great, but you have three guys who you could argue are top 25 defenders in the league. They've been playing hot. They're peaking at the right time. They don't have Embiid, but when he gets back, they'll just get better. And this says a lot about Ben Simmons. I mean, that he was able to succeed this much without Embiid. This guy is fucking incredible. I mean, Ben Simmons is honestly, I don't know if there is. I think the only player, and we are in an age of like all these amazing unicorns. I think the only player that has come close to LeBron James. Outside of Ben Simmons is Giannis, and that's saying a lot, you know, because Giannis has cemented himself as a top 10 player in the league. LeBron has been the best player in the world for about the past decade, and you know when you're already drawing those kinds of comparisons and praise when you're a rookie, it's pretty amazing. It's funny too. You think back, and I actually came back across an article I wrote a couple of years ago about whether the Sixers should draft Simmons or Ingram. And luckily, I was very much pro Simmons. Whenever someone said they should draft Brandon Ingram, I was like, that's kind of silly. Not because Brandon Ingram's not good, and he is. I thought he would be, but Simmons had the potential to be a generational talent. It looks like he is.
On the defensive end of the floor for him has impressed me just as much as his offensive end of the floor. Sixers first run of switch heavy defense, and I saw some stat where Ben Simmons has spent, he's the only player in the NBA who's spent at least 20% of the time guarding point guard, shooting guard, small forward, and power forward. So he's guarding everyone. Huge part of that number three defense. As a
he's a freak. Yeah. And that's the thing, too. Like, we always make these crazy comparisons pre-draft, like, Brandon Ingram's going to be Kevin Durant or whatever. But it's like, if you wanted to compare Ben Simmons to LeBron James, not crazy. It's pretty cool to see. Like, you never thought you'd see someone like that again. And all of a sudden, Ben Simmons, who literally cannot shoot the ball much better than you or I, is just dominating the NBA and no one has any idea how to stop him. So it's awesome.
What impact on the shooting do you think that'll have in the playoffs? Game will slow down a little bit.
I think it'll have some impact. I think he may struggle a bit. I think, you know, the lack of experience plus that is going to be a bit of an issue. I do wonder what they are without Embiid when that kind of stuff comes up. But I think they'll be fine. You know, I think the biggest thing has been that their road is relatively easy. They get the Heat round one, which we'll talk about in a second, and then they get either the Bucks or the Celtics round two. I think it's going to be a fun run for you guys. I think because if you look at it this way, you get to see Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid in their first playoffs. You get to see Markelle Fultz and see what he can become and just see more of him. And I never jumped off the Fultz train. Everybody was like, oh, is this just the guy? Like, why was he the consensus number one overall pick? Like, Fultz is very good. And you give Fultz another year, I think he's going to get there. And, you know, you'll finally see this core culminate. It's going to be a lot of fun for Sixers fans and for the NBA because they were built in a interesting, different, and in my opinion, the right way, this team. And seeing it all play out on the court is going to be awesome. So, plus on top of the fact that you're looking really good in the future and in worst case scenario, you get upset by the Heat and all of a sudden, okay, next year is just our year. I mean, the Sixers, you got to assume that, like everyone talks about like Boston, how good they're going to be. Boston is not going to have a stranglehold on the East for the next 5 years because Philadelphia is going to be right there with them.
Yeah, I mean, Simmons and Embiid are going to be better than anyone that Celtics have, honestly. Celtics are great. I'm honestly scared of their future because they'll be competing with us for years, but Simmons and Embiid are going to be the best two players in that series.
Yeah, and in a lot of series, too. Let's move on to their opponent in the first round series, the Miami Heat. It's another amazing Spoelstra coaching job. I mean, you know, what he's gotten out of Josh Richardson, who is a very good player. You know, Bam in his rookie year, Justice Winslow and Kelly Olynyk, just the lineups he puts out there. It's really cool to see. I remember I had a conversation with, I forget who it was, years ago when LeBron and Dwayne Wade were still on the Heat. Wade still is, obviously. And we were talking about how much coaching matters in the NBA. And, Eric Spoelstra is just riding the coattails of LeBron. And I was like, no, like if you actually watch the game and you kind of understand it, like you can see how good of a coach he is and what he does in game, what he does managing certain players, certain talent. And it's really showing now. Eric Spoelstra is a top five coach in the league, and there's no question about it. And the Miami Heat, despite having some talent and some veterans, they wouldn't be here without him. So do you think that the Heat, did the Heat scare you at all? And what do you think is going to happen with the Hassan Whiteside saga?
So they do scare me. Whiteside, in my opinion, has always been, I hate to say it, a tad overrated, though.
I agree.
He gets a lot of blocks, gets a lot of rebounds, but I'm not sure if he's that great defensively. That the blocks number shows. I think it's more blocks than defensive positioning. But in general, other than Whiteside, this team is, I love this team. It's phenomenal. And they have all these role players who know exactly what their roles are everyone can shoot on their team. They just run around a lot of screens. Credit to Chris Spoelstra with the system they have on offense. But they got Wayne Ellington, who's had a career year under them.
Yeah, he's been incredible.
There's a lot of value of not having a player in your rotation who is bad either offensively or defensively. They're just solid.
And it's almost like they're like a poor man's, like, I guess you could say like a poor man's kind of Rockets team where they don't have that weakness. You can't target that guy in the playoffs.
Yeah, and even the Sixers, like, you can target Bellinelli. You can target Redick on defense. There's things you can do, but this team, like, there's no – everyone can defend. Everyone can shoot. Everyone moves and cuts the ball and passes the ball off cuts very well. That's honestly what I'm most scared of. Just, like, they play hard, and they've had a lot of close games in the regular season, which should bode well for them in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that they're going to play right. It's going to be interesting because of the experience gap here. And, I mean, I assume Embiid will be back sooner rather than later, but if Miami steals a game in Philly, one of these first two, it's going to be a lot more interesting. What are you doing for the game, for game one?
I'm either going to game one or game two. So waiting to hear which game I'm going to. But we have a big tailgate happening. You are very invited, as well as all the rest of our listeners.
Eli just sending an open invite to all of the brunch listeners. If you guys want to watch game one in Philly, so that means you have tickets for all of us, right? That's what you're saying, correct?
I have a big enough couch where everyone can hang out there at my house.
Oh, okay. all right, well.
But, what are you saying?
Sorry, do you have any more closing thoughts on the Sixers-Heat matchup before I move on?
No, I'm just giddy at this point, but we can move on.
Okay, well, let's move on, and I'll talk a little bit about the next matchup, Celtics-Bucks, while you adjust yourself. The Boston Celtics obviously have had some struggles this year, but none bigger when they've been missing Kyrie Irving. And I know they've put together a nice winning streak with him out, but at the end of the day, having this team and this offense, you know, it's tough when it comes to playoff time. And, you know, you're getting a decently easy matchup in the Bucks, but there's a lot of intrigue about this matchup, even if the winner could just be fodder for the Sixers next round. I mean, I guess the expectations are relatively low for the Celtics. What do you think is more likely? Do you think it's more likely that, you know, a solid and modern core of, like, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, Al Horford, plus Brad Stevens coaching in the home court, you think that's more likely to, like, succeed here? Or do you think this is a series that Giannis Antetokounmpo just takes over?
I think Celtics still have this one. They're very well coached. They play good defense. Their offense isn't predicated around a star. And, yes, Kyrie Irving's been incredible when he's played. But they just do a lot of motion. Horford's been great. They're a better team still, even with the injuries.
Wow, that's a bold call, especially since the Bucks have the best player on the floor by far. It's really crazy. This team has not really taken off like many people expected, and I know a lot of it maybe is the coaching. You know, Jason Kidd did not have a great tenure there, and you know this defense is not very good, and it's shown in Kidd's time, and maybe Joe Prunty hasn't been able to really get them somewhere, which is understandable. A coaching change mid-year is not really the easiest thing to adjust to, but if the Bucks don't have a really good year next year, and that's another team, you know, that we're talking about the future of the East, the Sixers and the Celtics being up there, if Milwaukee can kind of get the most out of its roster, they're up there too. It just confuses me that they haven't really been able to get a ton out. I mean, I know Brogdon has had his injuries this year, but you're flanking Giannis with Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe. And then on top of that, like I said, you have Brogdon and the returning Jabari Parker. It just seems like there's more here for a team that is built around Giannis. And he, you know, maybe they are not playing him at center enough. Maybe they're not utilizing the lineups enough. Maybe a good coach will change that. But I do wonder, you know, when will they put it all together? And I kind of agree with you. I don't know if they can do it this series. I think Boston having the best defense in the league is going to be tough because Milwaukee, you know, their offense is really their stronger side of the ball. And they're a top 10 mm-hmm. team in offense. But the fact that Boston is going to be able to really put the clamps on them and also throw a lot of bodies at Giannis, who did have a lot of success against Boston this year, but I think he averaged over 33 points. But I think a lot of people may think this Milwaukee one is a popular upset pick because of the injuries on the Celtics, but I just don't know if I see it, you know?
Yeah. I wish the Bucks were better because they are a fun team and I want Giannis to do well. Taking away my Sixers fandom, like I just want him to do well. But
yeah, that's the great thing about these playoffs is because there's so many players you just love
yeah.
to see, love to root for.
Yeah, and I thought they were turning the corner 2 years ago, and it just hasn't happened still.
Yeah, and Giannis has been in the playoffs before. This isn't like let's let him get his feet wet. You know, this is somewhat crucial, and Milwaukee has to really, really push the right buttons over the next year or so, or else they could risk losing him in a few years when he's a free agent. That's just kind of what happens when, you know, you're a superstar in a city like Milwaukee. No offense to Milwaukee. A buddy of mine went there, and he said it's really great. So right now we've got the Celtics and Sixers advance. We've got Rockets, Warriors. We've got a lot of chalk here. So as we move through the rest of the first round, maybe we'll save the Cavs for last because there's a lot to get into with them. Let's bounce back to the Western Conference. A series that I think will be one of the best, if not the best, of the first round, and this comes as no surprise, it's a 4-5 matchup. You have the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Utah Jazz. And I know you told me you were really excited for this one too. The Jazz have just had an incredible year, and there is a lot to break down for that team. In what's really led them to their success. And they really just missed out on being a 3 seed. So, you know, the gap between the 3 and the 5 is not that much. And then the Thunder, not only is it this is their year to, like, you know, kind of – this is their time to put it all together and see what they get out of this team, but if it doesn't go well, then I don't know what happens because we saw the solo Russ experiment does not work. And if Paul George leaves, then – you don't really know where you go with this team. So what are you looking for in this series off the bat?
I'm looking to see if the Jazz's offense is sustainable. You know that they're going to have a good defense. They're going to still have a good defense. But recently in the past, 2018, the past how many games, they've been unstoppable. And that's mainly because of their – that's partly because of their offense. I want to see if Mitchell can do it in the postseason. I want to see if their hot shooting continues. But they play the right way. They pass the ball a lot.
They do.
Play good defense. They're a fun team to watch, and Quinn Snyder's done a great job. He's up there as Coach of the Year right now, considering.
Yeah, I feel like he doesn't get enough love because, you know, you just have Dwayne Casey and Brad Stevens who have just been so incredible this year, among other guys.
But their defense is going to win it for them this year. If they can continue to play elite defense, then and keep Russell Westbrook contained, while I have them winning right now.
Yeah, I like the Thunder a lot. I like this team when it was constructed and getting the Paul George trade. Not so much when they got Carmelo Anthony. And I do wonder if he's a guy who really deserves to be playing many, if any, minutes this series. It's just he's become such a minus on both ends of the ball. It's really bad. But this just looks to me
like – I didn't see it coming,
like,
honestly.
I mean, as a Knicks fan
– I know. You watched the Knicks more than I did last year, obviously. And I knew he wasn't the same player he was when he was in his prime, but my God. Like, he
– This is the thing with Melo is when Kristaps Porzingis was a rookie, I understand you don't want to totally turn the reins over to a rookie player, but at that point, that was hit Porzingis' team. Melo did not have it. That is when Melo needed to start to accept his lesser role, was 2 years ago, because his skill had just declined so much and he was not playing defense and not moving the ball. Now, he is at the point where he may not be able to be in an NBA rotation. He's gone past that point. Everyone's saying, like, oh, Melo's accepted his, like, lesser role this year. Like, you know, maybe it'll work. Like, I don't know if he deserves that lesser role. And it pains me to say, because Carmelo Anthony has brought me more happiness than any Knick outside of Jeremy Lin has in the past 20 years. Although I guess I'll count Kristaps. Rest in peace for now, my son. But it does look to me like, even though I like this Thunder team and the talent and star power on it, I could see an implosion here when you have one of the best defenses in the league going up against a team that has still struggled to find its footing and also has to endure whatever melodrama, no pun intended, happens. The Roberson injury, Paul George's shooting slump, and I do wonder what you're getting out of this bench. I mean, who's going to really step up here? Steven Adams had a great year, but off the bench, I mean, Jeremy Grant's got to be big. And after that, Patrick Patterson's been a zero. They're relying a lot on guys like Raymond Felton and Alex Abrines, and even now Corey Brewer and Josh Eustace. And in the playoffs, I just don't know if that's going to cut it, especially when it seems like they haven't really figured it out yet.
Yeah, Paul George is key. Like, if he performs like a top 10 player in this series or in the playoffs in general, they can win. But I'm not sure what's up with him. But they can't win without him. They don't.
He's already packing his bags for LA.
Maybe, or the Sixers, but
okay.
I don't know.
All of a sudden, Philly's become
getting everyone there. What?
Philly's all of a sudden become the destination. Hold on, we have a caller right now, Eli. That I want to welcome in. We have our first caller of the show. Could you please state your name, whoever the caller is?
It's about time you answered my call. I mean, I've been waiting
for hours.
Hey, Joe.
Wow. Joe, this is Eli Silverman. He went to TCNJ with us.
Hey, Eli. Honestly, my main reason for calling in is I haven't talked to Eli in about 3 years, so I wanted to say hi.
Oh, I see. This is the time you had to get him here.
How you doing, Joe? How's Chicago?
It's good. I'm actually at Giordano's right now. I'm waiting for my deep dish pizza. I felt like calling in, but also I wanted to say that, Eli, you're doing a great job on the show. I was listening to the beginning as well, and you're a natural, dude. I'm very impressed.
Yeah? Wow, thanks. I appreciate
you. Are you concerned about Eli taking your spot?
I mean, I just, you know, I've always had a dream of calling into my own show, so I wanted to just give you guys a quick shout.
Well, Joe, while you're on, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I don't really support the NBA, but I am pulling for the Sixers in these playoffs. If they make it far, I will watch their games.
Thank you.
Wow, that's a big statement. Do you have
Joe's
any, now that you're calling
into
an NBA podcast?
Joe's watched so many games with me. He's an honorary fan.
All right, that's all I got, guys. Keep up the good work.
Hey, thanks, man. We appreciate you calling in. And call back soon.
I will. Have a good night.
All right, take it easy, buddy.
I will.
All right, well, that was Joe Caputo. Some of you know him as the co-host of this show, most of you probably. But nice little call-in from Joe to talk about the Sixers a little bit. And let's jump right back in to Thunder Jazz. I think Quinn Snyder's has done such a phenomenal job of maximizing the talent and the lineups here. And the way they play defense and, you know, plugging in guys like Royce O'Neal, who all of a sudden is just, you know, right into their system and shut people down. I know Gobert has been hurt at times. I know they do have a lot of different combinations that have some trouble in the shooting department. You know, when you've had the Gobert Favors lineups, you have Ricky Rubio in the backcourt, And Quinn Snyder's done a phenomenal job of kind of breaking those guys up, but also getting them their minutes. And I do wonder, will that dry up at all in the postseason? Will there be a time when they are forced to play two non-shooters and then it all goes to shit? And at the end of the day, they do rely mainly on the two stars of the team being a rookie and a center. So it's interesting. But the Jazz are kind of what I love about the NBA playoffs, is that a team that really comes out of nowhere based on, you know, players that, you know, don't succeed usually in the same way they are right now in the league, and just brings it all together. And a lot of it is based on their culture. Losing Gordon Hayward, they've still managed to be a great team. So I'm really pulling for the Jazz. I think I might adopt them as my team of the playoffs, at least until we get a Jazz Sixers finals. Then I'll root for you, Eli.
Appreciate that. No, I'm interested to see how Donovan Mitchell does. He's the key. Like he's good enough to carry a team. And if he can carry that offense, and if he keeps shooting well, they have a chance to not only win this round, but honestly to compete with teams going forward. Even the Rockets. If they play offense like they have been and keep shooting well, and nothing dries up like you said could be in the playoffs, like, they have a chance.
Yeah, they've definitely got a I don't know if you would call it an antidote to the Rockets, but kind of putting that defensive pressure on them. Two underrated things about the Jazz, real quick. Dante Exum has come back and he's looking pretty good. And then of course you have Jay Crowder, the deadline acquisition, who's kind of been reborn a bit in the trade to the Jazz. So they do have the pieces, and I think that Quinn Snyder is the kind of coach who's going to deploy them the right way. I think they'll beat the Thunder. I really don't know what to make of the Thunder team going forward. I mean, I would love to see Russell Westbrook, Paul George, and then maybe someone else moving forward. But at the same time, maybe it's just best off if George goes to another team with better stars that he fits better with, or that, you know, have a little more potential. But there's definitely a lot on the line in this series.
Yeah, their future's in question. I mean, this will make and break it. Russell Westbrook will be there forever, but we know he can't carry a team by himself. Paul George was supposed to be the guy, so I hope he can step up.
Yeah, and that's the one thing I don't want to root against Thunder, because I do kind of want to see. I like to see how these teams succeed and if these experiments work, and I usually root for them to work. And we'll see what happens. Definitely a compelling series. Another compelling series is the last series we'll get to in the West. And that is the 3-seeded Portland Trailblazers against the six-seeded New Orleans Pelicans. There is a lot on the line. This may be the series out of all of the non quote unquote contenders, I guess you could say, that has the most on the line. Although if the Raptors lose to the Wizards, which we'll get to, that could have some serious repercussions. But Portland right now has looked like they have made a breakthrough. They've always been a pretty solid team. And this is the year that they've kind of broken through, gotten their defense to where it needs to be, and they look like a team that now could potentially be a perennial contender in the West. And that's what they needed to be, or else they kind of had to figure out what changes to make. Now, the question is, what exactly is a success for the Trailblazers in this playoffs? Would you say they're going to be happy with one win, or do they want – are they going to be considered a failure, maybe just by their own standards, simply by not making the Western Conference Finals because they've already gotten the whole first-round series win?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know where the Trailblazers go after this, if they only get one win or they lose in the first round. They're tied up financially going forward. So this is pretty much their team. And this is the time to see, like, are they good enough? Are they good enough to hang with the best team in the West? They played great all year. But can they win 7 games against the Warriors or the Rockets? I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting if they can get there. If they play a Warriors team that has a bum Steph Curry, this backcourt, we've seen games, and I remember it was a few years ago, I think. I don't remember exactly which year, but there was a game when the Warriors played the Trailblazers, and Lillard and McCollum just completely went off, and they were the superior backcourt that night. And Lillard, I think, had at least close to 50 points. And it just kind of showed, like, you know, what could happen when, you know, you have two players that have at least the potential to go toe-to-toe with Curry and Thompson. So it would be a lot of fun to see Portland face Golden State, because I don't know if given the injury, I don't know if you can really count them out. You know, they've, like I said, they've kind of broken through and turned a corner here. And it'll depend a lot on guys like, you know, Jusuf Nurkić, who has been – he has come with his warts this year, and obviously you can – say that this team has been so much better since he came to the club last year, at least in terms of wins and losses. But there are still some questions about him and what the on and off numbers look like. You know, you have guys like Zach Collins, a rookie who's stepping up and starting to make an impact. Shabazz Napier has also been a pretty good backup point guard. And then a guy like Evan Turner, who he kind of has the ability to go one way or another. If he plays well, which doesn't happen too often, he can really, really push the team forward. If he doesn't, he becomes a liability. So, past McCollum and Lillard, I do wonder how the Pelicans will attack this team.
Yeah, the Trailblazers can play good defense. Their offense is going to be good. They had top 10 defense in the league, right? What, number 8, I think. Right with the Warriors. If they can play good defense, they can win. And if they can play at a top 5 level, even, they can win. How do you guard this team? Jrue Holiday is going to be going at Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum every time. Who guards Anthony Davis? I mean, Nurkić, I don't know how they can, if they match up well with the Pelicans, honestly.
Yeah, I'm
think thinking about it right now, and like all the matchups, it kind of goes the Pelicans' way.
Well, I do agree. I mean, I think Jrue Holiday should have a pretty tall task, but he may be able to at least step up to the plate in terms of guarding the Blazers' backcourt. But he can't guard McCollum and Lillard, and it'll be interesting to see who they kind of put on the other guy. I mean, Rajon Rondo is not really much of a defender anymore. Is Etuan Moore going to be the guy? So it seems like defense on the opposing team stars will be what what it's going to come down to. The Blazers, a lot of talk about the Blazers this year was how their defense, like we said multiple times, has gotten much better this year. But their offense has struggled. I mean, they're 16th in the league in offensive rating, and you wonder, you always figure a team with that kind of backcourt is going to be able to score the ball well, and it just hasn't really happened this year, despite the fact that they're the 3 seed and have had so much success. So I do wonder, especially if you look at the way they match up with New Orleans. New Orleans, yes, their defense is not quite at the level of the Blazers. They're 13th in the league. But they are a top 10 offense, and I know these numbers could potentially be skewed by when they had Boogie, but what Anthony Davis has done with the injury to Boogie has been nothing short of remarkable. And it's another one of those NBA little meta storylines. It's really cool to see a guy who has so much talent. I kept telling people in the NBA or telling people that Anthony Davis is going to be a top 3 NBA player within like a couple years of him being in the league, and it wasn't too far off, but he's just got that talent, and he is like, you know, outside of Kevin Durant, he's the ultimate unicorn that can just do everything and really be such an elite player on both ends of the ball. It's what I love about him, but he's taken to a new level here. Obviously, he's had a huge amount of help from Holiday, which cannot go unnoticed, but Davis has just been, he's taken it to another level. You often see with these players, especially a guy like Davis or a guy like Giannis, we expect so much out of them right off the bat. And just it takes some time sometimes. Think about, you know, how much Kevin Durant has grown in the past couple of years. And you have to remember how young Anthony Davis still is. What is he, like 25?
Yeah, just turned 25. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and now he kept, looks like he's coming.
He kept being on all those ESPN best players under 25, and every year that was like 5 years in a row. I was like, no way he's still under 25.
Well, this has really been his coming out party this year.
I'm pretty excited for everyone to be able to watch him. Honestly, like, Pelicans aren't on TV much. People get to watch highlights of him when he does pretty well, obviously. But, like, he'll actually be able to get to be watched every game for the playoffs, which is going to be really great for him. People are really going to understand, like, how incredible he is.
Yeah.
It's a different story watching him.
And he's also, you know, really put it together on the defensive end too. He's may even have another level, but he's probably it seems to be the bronze medalist in the Defensive Player of the Year race behind Embiid and Rudy Gobert. And I know Kawhi Leonard did not play much this season. I know Draymond Green had an off year, but if he's become a no-brainer top five defender in the league already, and he still seems like there could be another level to go at least on that end of the ball, it's pretty cool. See a guy develop like that and really, really materialize as you envision someone's ceiling. This series is very big for the Pelicans, obviously, because of DeMarcus Cousins. I think even if they lose this series, there's probably a decent chance that DeMarcus Cousins returns to New Orleans, and I would love to see him come back just because I don't really know where else he goes and what he does there, and I want to see the Twin Towers experiment and just how it works over an extended period of time. But who do you think is going to win this series?
Pelicans. This is a toss-up, but I'm going with the Pelicans because they have Anthony Davis. He's the best player in the series. And Drew Holiday has been one of my favorite players since he's been on the Sixers. I've appreciated him for so long where – this might just be more rooting interest, honestly. It's a pretty close matchup. And I'm going to start with the Pelicans. Best player in the series.
I'm going to say New Orleans as well. I think that, like you said, best player in the series is huge, but I don't know what happens when you have to guard Anthony Davis. Like, there's really no one on this Blazers roster that is equipped for that. And I'd love to see a Dame Lillard breakout and him go on fire in the playoffs, and something that I feel like we're kind of overdue for. You know, we haven't really seen him take over the way you would kind of think he would. But I would love to see these two go toe-to-toe. At the end of the day, I think Davis is just better. These teams are very close. Like I said, the New Orleans at least have more firepower offensively. And, you know, Holiday has kind of been – this player, I think he's just had injuries and some other issues over the course of the years that hasn't helped him reach his full potential. But, you know, if you can really get – I know Drew Holiday is not going to be the second-best player on a championship team, but if he can be the second-best player – I think he can be the second-best player on a team that makes it to the second round.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And I guess having the home court, that's big for Portland. But at the end of the day, I think New Orleans is just a little bit better, and I think they're going to beat the Blazers in this one. So this is my upset.
This is mine too. All right, we're in agreement.
Well, we're in a lot of agreement here so far. We'll pick the later rounds at the end, but right now I believe we have everything. We have Warriors over the Spurs. We have Rockets over the Timberwolves. We have Jazz over the Thunder, and then we have the Blazers falling to the Pelicans. Let's just finish off the West here, and we'll get to the Cavs, to the Raptors, to the rest of the East. Warriors against the Pelicans. Who do you got?
With the assumption that Curry gets back by round two, which is the plan right now, I think there's too many pieces. You can throw too many people at Davis, maybe not stop him, but slow him down. Inspired Draymond and even Kevin Durant, I have the Warriors.
It's
too much for them.
Yeah, I think a team with, you know, this week of a supporting cast is not going to be Golden State. And then we've got Rockets against the Jazz. Who do you like here?
I think the Jazz can be very competitive in this series. But it's the Rockets. I think maybe they win two games, the Jazz. That's about it.
All right.
Close
and
games,
the,
but otherwise, yeah.
I'm in agreement there. I think, you know, Utah can give them a test, but ultimately it's going to be Houston Golden State. I think you said before you think the Warriors still got it. They're still going to be in the finals. Are they there for you?
Yeah, still there. This is still under the assumption that Curry comes back, maybe not 100%, but even 80%, I have the money.
Of course.
How about you?
I'm going to be a little bold. I'm going to pick the Rockets. I just think that if there's any sort of complication with Steph Curry or if he comes out a little slow, I think that Houston has the ability to make the Warriors uncomfortable for a seven-game series, a seven-game series that they have home court for. So this has all been a culmination. Daryl Morey has been waiting for this moment. I think he will get it. And I just have a weird feeling. I mean, you always talk about, like, oh, when is this Warriors dynasty going to end? When is it going to end? Like, it's going to end one day. And when it ends, it ends. It's not something you can really predict. But I'm going to try to do it. I think Houston has got it. And I think they're going to go to the finals.
I'm rooting for them. Honestly, I'm rooting for them.
It would be nice. It'd be nice to see a change of pace. And I think, I mean, I guess you can argue if Golden State gets to the finals, no one of these is stopping them. If Houston gets there, at least maybe you'll get a bit more of a competitive series.
For sure.
All right. So let's finish it up. We'll go back to the East and let's go Raptors Wizards. I mean, I think the Raptors are legit this year, but it would be such a disaster if they fell to the Wizards after all that's happened with them. What do you get out of this Toronto team? Are they revamped, or is it same old Raptors?
They're revamped, but my confidence still isn't high. They did so well this year with their supporting cast, and they really played 10 guys. But in the playoffs, that you don't see that very often. Like, DeRozan, Lowry, they're going to be playing 36-plus minutes a night, 40 minutes a night. Like, that's what happens in the playoffs. And, like, the depth doesn't really just come into a factor at that point. John, like, I still think they're going to win this series. I'm not sure how far they can go after this, though.
Yeah, I think that one thing about the – you know, you said Lowry, DeRozan, they're going to have to play heavy minutes in the playoffs. I think because of the depth, it did at least give them a bit of a rest the regular season. I think they're going to have fresher legs than they've had. That's kind of been their trouble in the past. But it's weird because this Raptors team does look like it's actually, you know, a new kind of team where they've changed their style of play a little bit. They have that depth. But what actually carries over to the playoffs, I mean, Jonas Valanciunas could very well become unplayable. Serge Ibaka is a good player in theory, but has been on a pretty decent decline. Fred VanVleet has been arguably one of the best six men in all the league, and yet he might be struggling a bit because he's a smaller player if he goes up against teams that have, like, that kind of length to stop him. And then, of course, Everybody loves OG, but as a rookie, I do wonder what exactly you're going to get out of him. So there are still some question marks here. The depth of the supporting cast is very young. I like this Raptors team, but I don't know how much translates into postseason success. I feel like we're going to at least get a statement opening around against the Wizards. I just think that this is the time. They can't really fuck around and lose a game one again and, you know, start to bring the question marks back in their head, but I do worry long term for Toronto. As good as they've been this year, and as much as they've improved, they're top five in offense and defense. You know, until I really see it, I'm just not sure where exactly the ceiling takes them.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, what happens if OG misses a bunch of shots, or some of the players that were hitting some shots and had career years? Do Lowry and DeRozan, are they good enough to be superstars and carry their offense like you need to in the postseason sometimes? That's my concern. They've proven that in the past few postseasons where I can't really count on that.
Yeah, it's tough to put your faith in a team like that. Even though I did, I actually bet the Raptors to win the Eastern Conference. It was before the trade deadline. They were 4-1. So now they're like slight, not favorites, but they're right behind Cleveland. But I don't know. I mean, the problem is I was just going to hedge and bet Cleveland, but now the fucking Sixers have thrown a wrench into it. So maybe if they pass Cleveland, I'll throw some money on Philly. But on the Washington side of the ball, I don't know if we want to get into them too much just because we kind of know, again, what this Washington team is. There hasn't been too much development this year, although it's important to talk about John Wall's health, what the team's ceiling actually is. And there's a lot of players that wasn't really – they don't really lose first-round matchups, which is interesting. It didn't really hit me until now. They don't really lose first-round matchups. They don't get past the second round. But this has been a much weirder year in D.C. for the Wiz because of – you know, you've had the rumblings with Gortat and having trouble with Wall and Wall's injury and then the everybody eats thing. And overall, it just seems like a team that has underachieved and looks to be destined for an early exit. But I've always loved the Wizards and their talent. So I don't know. Do you think that there is anything potentially here with the Wizards, or is there just too much dysfunction?
I'd like to see a more competitive series, but they've limped their way into the postseason. The everybody eats thing was pretty amusing, honestly, but it's crazy. Like, I remember watching once that everybody eats thing started, and they played the Sixers, and they beat the Sixers pretty bad. That was earlier in 2018. And they just, like, moved the ball great, played great defense, and that just hasn't seemed to happen with John Wall. Like, if they lose in the first round here, I'm wondering what happens with him in the future.
Well, I mean, right now it's tough because he's an injury-prone, aging veteran who is signed to a massive contract. So, he could become an albatross real quick, and I don't want that to happen. I love John Wall, another player who's just a joy to watch. But I do think that Washington eventually will need Wall to reach their ceiling. Maybe they can get somewhere with him on the bench. But this whole everybody eats thing, I understand it. I understand the concept of it. I understand the kind of Ewing theory where you take out a guy who is not quite a ball stopper, but changes the complexion of the offense and the way everyone else plays. But I do think John Wall needs to be rolling on all cylinders for this team to take off. And I mean, they have just as much talent as, or at least they're close to the rest of the teams in this conference. So, again, going to be an interesting series, probably one of the more fascinating 1-8s we'll have had in a while. And I do remember 3 years ago when the Wizards swept the Raptors, and that was an embarrassing series. And you do wonder the Raptors players or coaches.
They have to. I mean, it's the same team for both teams, right?
It's relatively similar.
It's pretty funny. They're different directions they've gone.
And yet, have they even really moved one way or the other? You know, it's kind of been more of the same. So, another fun series, and I think this first round is going to be one of the better ones we've had in a while. So let's close it up with the Cleveland Cavaliers, a team that everybody loves to talk about because of LeBron James. And this Cleveland team it's been the weirdest of all years, I think, of LeBron years. You could say that – I feel like you'd say that about any year with LeBron because of the fact that, you know, he does kind of bring a certain dynamic to the team, at least mood-wise. But I do wonder, you know, I've always been someone who says, don't bet against LeBron until he gives a reason to. He's LeBron, he's going to figure it out. Do you think, maybe not in this series against Indiana, but do you think that there is legitimate concern about the Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference and try to keep your Sixers bias out of this?
Yeah, there is. They are a terrible defensive team, and something like that, I'm not sure if that just, like, clicks when it jumps postseason. Yeah, LeBron's offense is going to click. playoff LeBron is going to happen, but will that translate to the defensive end? It's hard to be that good and make it to the finals with that bad of a defense.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to actually like combat that. It's been such a terrible defense, and obviously but not having Kyrie Irving has been huge too as a secondary playmaker and a guy who LeBron can count on to create offense outside of him. I mean, the supporting cast, I think they made solid deals at the trade deadline. I think Larry Nance, Rodney Hood, who's he's been on and off, but they can bring something to this team that they didn't have before. They looked dead in the water before the trade deadline. They honestly did. But usually this team is able to flip a switch. And even if they did, I'm sure they will do it again to an extent. I mean, the offense is always pretty good. Like, this is one of the best offenses in the league. It has been for a while. When you surround LeBron James with four shooters, it's pretty incredible to watch. And even when you surround him with four bums, it's pretty incredible to watch. But I do wonder, this defense, last year, the Cavs were able to at least tune up the defensive intensity enough to get to the finals. This year, the defense seems worse and the competition seems better. You know, I don't know if the defense is actually able to flip the switch here. Is there an X factor in this series or in this playoff run for Cleveland that you're looking at? Because they need one.
They need one. Kevin Love, will they actually use him on offense other than just a spot-up shooter? I think they need to. It can't just be LeBron every time, and they can't really count on anyone else to create offense for themselves and other people. Other than that, it's just their shooters. J.R. Smith has to get hot and commit himself to the defensive end. He hasn't done that at all this year. Rodney Hood, George Hill, like, if they go on a shooting streak, which I know they can, they're all capable shooters, they're fine.
It's about
their shooting, and like they need one secondary playmaker other than LeBron. And if they get hot from three, I don't see anyone in the East stopping them.
Yeah, that's a good point, because even if the defense is pretty atrocious, if you can't outscore them, it might not matter. They could win all these games 135 to 130. It just might not matter. I don't really know there's a lot going on with Tristan Thompson now as well, which throws another wrench into the Cavaliers game plan, although he has kind of faded off this year, and I think Nance is probably their more preferred option, but I don't know.
Nance is a better player at this point.
Yeah, and I would like to see what they can get out of George Hill and Rodney Hood when they really need it. You know, not just scoring the ball, but playmaking and defensively. And some of these guys who, you know, they haven't been here for that long, have they caught up with the scheme? What even is the scheme? I don't know. It seems a bit messy, and I don't really want to bet against LeBron, but it's going to be a tough task. Let's talk about the Pacers real quick and wrap it up. I mean, Oladipo's been incredible this year. You can't say it enough. Do you think that, does this team have what it takes to actually test the Cavs? And B, what do you think Miles Turner's impact on the series is?
So the Pacers were one of the teams that I just didn't want to play. If I was the Sixers,
I just didn't
want to play them. They're a good team everywhere around. Turner still is growing, and if he can even step up even further, especially on the offensive end of the series, I think he has so much potential, and he hasn't put it together yet.
Yeah,
by the way, at least
he's had a lot of injuries.
I know, and he started off with a concussion, and then and another injury as well. And I feel bad, honestly, because this is supposed to be his breakout year. But he's getting better. And he can be the best player on this team, even over Oladipo. He has that potential.
I agree. I like Miles Turner a lot. And he has that kind of, I always say, if you're a big man, you need to at least do one of two things at a high level to really succeed in the NBA. You need to either shoot the ball well or block shots. Turner can do both. And that mm-hmm. really says a lot about him as a player, a young guy. I would like to see him have a bit of a coming out party this playoffs. It did take him a little while to get things going because of the injuries this year, but I would love to see Turner, you know, really take it to Kevin Love and have a good series here. I don't know how much Indiana will test Cleveland, but I think things are looking up for the Pacers. I mean, they were able to, you know, get rid of Paul George, who was going to leave anyway, and actually get a potential star out of him in Oladipo. And then you combine that with Turner, and then all of a sudden, a couple more moves later, they are back in the mix with the rest of the people in the East. Quick question before – I'm guessing you're picking the Cavs here, but quick question before we wrap it up with the East picks. Six games, folks. Where is LeBron James next year?
The Philadelphia 76ers.
Okay, that's what I
and
thought you
that's
said.
Not – no. I know, but honestly, like, thinking about it, I think he wants to stay in the East. I think there's a good chance he stays with the Cavs, because I think winning for him is the most important thing, and the East is better for that opportunity, obviously. If he goes to the Lakers, they're still not there, even if he gets someone like Paul George. I know he cares about his legacy more than anything else, and he also cares about winning. And thinking about the teams that have cap space and who could contend, it might be the Sixers. He'd be a pretty good addition off our bench.
I would have to agree with you, Eli. I mean, it really does seem like the Sixers would be the best fit. I do have a couple concerns just about the spacing there. You know, you have potentially three guys. Embiid and LeBron, who none of them are you know, top-notch three-point shooters, but obviously, you know, with that kind of talent, you can figure it out. It does interest me. I do think he'll want to stay in the East. There's just not much out there in the West for him. He can't really go to, like, one of the good teams, and if he goes to the Lakers or another, like, not a great team, they're rebuilding. So I think a lot will have to do if he could bring Paul George somewhere, maybe Boogie Cousins. Real shame that the Knicks don't have cap space, because if they did, I really think that they would at least be a dark horse in this race, but I don't even know if it's feasible. So with that being said, let's run through the rest of the East. We've got it pretty chalky here, I think. So the second round, you would have the Toronto Raptors hosting the Cleveland Cavaliers. Who do you got here?
I got the Cavs. They played them pretty well at the end of the season, too. Once the Cavs are playing in a group.
I have Cleveland here too, and I think that, you know, it's going to be a bit closer than it was a couple years ago in the Eastern Conference Finals, when it was a foregone conclusion and the Cavs weren't even trying. But I've got Cleveland anyway. And then I'm guessing you have the Philadelphia 76ers upsetting, quote-unquote, the Boston Celtics?
How can I not? Yeah, I think playing at this point right now, they're a better team. Celtics are tough. I'm going to hate playing against them. But if the Sixers play as well as they've played in the past, in 2018 even, they're the favorite.
Yeah, hard to deny that. And then Sixers-Cavs, do you think Philly gets to the finals?
So probably not.
Eli. You're going to make us end the show on a really sad note?
I have to be realistic at some point, because I'm just I can't put all my
setting yourself up for heartbreak?
Yeah, and I know it's already going to happen. I've spent too much to watch like 80 games this year out of the 82. It's hard for me not to be so invested.
Good God.
I may need an intervention at some point.
Okay. Well, good news, buddy, is there is next year, and you've got a bright future ahead. So I wouldn't beat yourself too much up over this. So then we've got the finals, I have Cleveland moving on as well. I have a Houston-Cleveland finals, and you have a Golden State-Cleveland finals. Real quick, because we are running out of time. Cavs or Warriors, part 17, I think, at this point. Who you got?
It's the Warriors. I hate to be boring. I hate it, but it's the Warriors. They're better.
Yeah, I mean, it's better to be right if you have to be boring. I think the Rockets would win a series against the Cleveland, too. So I think whichever team comes out of that big Western Conference matchup is in good shape to win the NBA Finals. So, Eli, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure. This was a lot of fun, and I know that we really talked quite a bit here. I'm glad you hung on for the whole show, and hopefully we didn't bore people too much. Maybe we'll have you back on for the playoffs for an update. This went pretty seamlessly, so it would be great to have you back on as our NBA correspondent.
I would love that. Emergency podcast when the Sixers win the NBA championship, but otherwise, yeah, have me back anytime. I'd be happy to.
Absolutely. That would definitely be a break glass in case of emergency situation. All right, Eli, thanks for coming on, and we will talk to you soon.
I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
All right, so that was Eli Silverman. Thanks again for coming on the show, Eli. Thanks for Joe Caputo, I believe was the caller's name who called in. And thanks, everyone, for listening. I know it was a very long show today. I wanted to get a lot of NBA playoff stuff in here. There was a lot to go over, a lot of stuff. With all the teams still alive, we had to really break down everybody, and I wanted to do a complete show here. So thank you to everybody who listened to the whole show. And, you know, a lot of it was me and Eli, but there was a decent amount where I think I was probably just rambling a bit. So thanks a lot for sticking with me, calling in for Joe and everybody else out there who listened. We hope you enjoyed it. Remember to follow us on Twitter at The Brunch Pod. Follow us on Instagram at The Brunch Network. Like us on Facebook. And folks, do not forget to fill out those brackets. Your deadline is Thursday. It's coming up, and you don't want your TV show to be misrepresented, so your favorite TV show. So with that being said, for The Brunch Network, this is Chris Malicki. Everyone have a great week, have a great weekend, and enjoy the NBA playoffs.